I had a dream last night. A vision. I saw a world full of people. Everybody was dancing and screaming loud. They were just there to listen to the music. It was deep. It was underground. Let's turn the world into a dance floor.
Are you guys ready for a state of trance? Put your hands in the air, come on!
This is a State of Trance podcast.
Hey, what's up, what's up? Welcome to a new podcast. And this week I have the pleasure to have in the studio Lawrence Hollett from, I said in the episode of the State of Trance, I said, from the England. It's perfect English. Welcome, Ruik. How are you doing,
thank
man?
Thank you. Yeah, no, good to be here. I'm doing really well, thanks.
I have a couple of questions from fans for you, and I would love to dive into the history of Ruik
a little bit.
So let's go for it. First of all, what I always do at the start of these podcasts is to ask, where did the spark come from that you wanted to start DJing? Or how did you find out that you were interested in music?
Okay, so I'm going to wind the clock back to when I was like 12 years old.
Okay.
And I started doing mobile discos to earn some money, right?
Mobile discos. Okay. How do we have to picture that?
So two really crap lights, a pair of crap speakers, a twin tape deck playing Celine Dion at a village hall. That's where we started from. So okay. it can only get better from there, right?
Yeah.
But then in my college years, I started putting on parties for all of the college guys. There's the famous squash club parties in my hometown.
Squash club parties, okay.
Yeah, so literally a squash club where you'd go and play the sport. I used to hire it out and, I'd play some really hard house and hard trance there. In fact, we came over to Amsterdam, buying records. Back in the day when I was 18, 19, I used to come over here record shopping. That's where it sort of just ignited, really.
So you went from playing a mobile disco when you were 12 years old with double tape decks, she said.
Yep.
Cassette players, we have to explain that for the millennials. Those were little plastic things where you would record things on. That's what it is.
Exactly.
But what is the moment that you were like, hey, dance music? Because you went from Celine Dion, playing Celine Dion, to dance music in between somewhere that you were 12 and 18.
Yeah, right. And I think it's the early house music, early dance tracks that are coming in, and then those really
on the
radio
or something. Right?
Yeah, exactly. And then you're starting to catch like Saltwater and tracks like that are coming out, and you're like, okay, I like this sort of vibe. And then I just sort of went down a much harder route. Like if you look through my vinyl collection, it is hard trance. You won't really find any sort of stuff that I'm playing now, although there are influences from that. That transition really came from coming to Amsterdam and record shopping here and thinking, I really, really enjoy this niche.
Do you still have all these vinyls?
Yeah.
Is it because we had podcasts before, we're talking about vinyls in the past and someone, I can't remember who it was, but also was saying like hard trance in the past with labels like Nucleus and BXR and stuff like that. Was that the sound that you were playing at that time?
Yeah, very similar. Nile Records. I was playing stuff by Aroma and I'm trying to think of the back catalog now, but they're all stacked in the garage. And then I'll tell you actually, the track that really did it for me was Bedrock Heaven Sent.
Okay.
When I heard that.
That's far away from hardstyle or hard trance.
Yeah, that was the sort of spark that really got me into trance. And then the Nightfly,
who was Blanket Jones.
Yes, yeah, stuff like that. And then progressing from that to the harder stuff. I think I just like that. I still do it now. You'll hear it in my sound. I still like that bass face. You know, when it kicks in, I'm like, oh
yeah,
go on. Yeah, exactly. Naughty,
Naughty. That was actually one of the questions also from Carno Downtown 79. When did you start DJing? Well, there you go. You started when you were 12. Yep. Then you started doing college parties. And here you are.
Yeah, well, the bit in between is when I left university with a degree in business, I actually became a DJ full-time, five nights a week, up and down the country, doing Liquids and Oceanas and mainstream nightclubs, playing everything from R&B to hip hop to garage to house to, you know, trance at the time and the floor filling anthems, even what you'd call, I used to do a night with my friend called cheese, and we would literally play the cheesiest music, you know, like The One and Only, and you know, stuff like that. It was a pure cheese
night. Rick Astley.
Yeah, exactly. All of that sort of stuff. And that, so my music spectrum's really, really broad.
That's interesting. Under which name were you performing back then?
It was
just for people to maybe be like, hey.
No, it was I was either just billed as myself or DJ LZ at the time.
DJ LZ?
Yeah.
You were going throughout the whole UK just performing at parties. You were throwing parties as well.
Yes, yeah, yeah. So I did a lot of student nights. You know, so when it was Freshers Week, it was you know, in fact that's how I met my wife.
Okay.
Yeah, so met her at a student night, and we've been married, we'll be married 10 years next year and been together for 15. So but yeah, back in the day I was DJing around the sort of student scene, and you know, some really great nights, because you could get away with some pretty heavy drum and bass, and you know, it would rock, you know, when you're playing Chasing Status and Pendulum and, you know, Tarantula and stuff like that. It was you know, it was good fun, you know, back in those days. But yeah, I couldn't do it now. Wow, 5 nights a week now.
It would
destroy me doing that. My ears would be toast by the end.
That's why you have to have earplugs.
Yeah, no, true. Yeah, yeah.
It's very important, to be honest. Next question, also from a fan. Actually, before, I'm going to ask you a question, because you said that you've been DJing for such a long time, but I was looking at your release list, and the first release that you actually had, or normally we see people just dropping in on small labels first and coming out here and there, but your first release was actually not until 2017, when you released On Armada Captivating First Light.
Yeah, so
how long did it take you to create something like that, and why didn't you start producing earlier?
So First Light wasn't actually the first track that was signed. It was actually CFEN. Okay. So that was signed first.
That was released later.
Released later. But yeah, Joel signed those two tracks, and First Light, well, we thought that's a good first release, right? First Light. So that came out first, and CFEN, I'm going to tell you what it actually stands for.
Please.
Right. So a good friend of mine, and where we were at the time, Jack, he owns a CrossFit place, and it stands for CrossFit East North Hants. And I said, look, I'm going to do this track. I'm just going to, because he loves dance music as well. And I was like, right, I'm going to do this track for you, and I'm going to call it CFEN.
So it's a sponsor tune?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. And Armin played it at Winter Music Conference at
Miami Ultra.
Yes, yeah. So, but why, you know, why wasn't I producing before then? It all sounded crap before I got to that point. And I'll be completely honest. James Diamond helped me with that track.
Okay.
So to get me to that point where, you know, I could level up to you know, release on that sort of thing. I had melody ideas. I had, you know, the structure of a track, but then it was really working with someone like that to help me get it to that level that's going to get on Captivating.
Yeah.
And then learning that process, you know, learning everything that you need to you know, take it to the next level.
I think James is a good tutor. I think correct me if I'm wrong, but he also gives like lessons to people and masterclasses and stuff like that.
Yeah, so he's got some great masterclasses on, I can't think of the website now. It's a subscription website, but he's really good at tutoring. Yeah,
Freshly Squeezed or Sonic Academy.
Sonic Academy, there you go. Yeah, so great tutor, and I worked with him for you know, a good couple of years, just, you know, learning everything around FL he was using then. I'm Ableton now, but FL at the time, and just learning every part of the craft.
Yeah, it takes a long time. Probably, I think a lot of people underestimate how much time it takes before you actually get to a certain level. And I think listening to these three ends that you gave so far, how much of a difference did your degree or your diploma in business make for you? Because when I hear your tune SFEN, that's a smart decision as well, that you have First Light, that was actually the first tune. So you were thinking about, but wait a minute, that's a better one to kick it off. And now that you brought in James Diamond to help you out instead of keep on going by yourself, just punching your head into the wall all the time.
Yeah, I think what a lot of people forget is this is a business still.
Yeah.
It's a music industry. An industry is a business. And, you know, the fact is, you know, factories and everything, they have their component parts and they bring them together through skilled labor, right? And it's the same as this. You know, if you want to bring someone in to write a particular melody that's a better piano player than you, then why wouldn't you do that? Mm-hmm. You know, or you want, you know, someone to do guitars or some live instruments or something like that. So really, you know, it's not being protective over that. It's just saying, look, we need some help in this place. And that's what an entrepreneur, yeah, I'm not saying I'm an entrepreneur, but that's the entrepreneur.
Oh, you kind of are. Yeah.
You know, bringing people together and networking and going, okay, if we get this group of people together in a room, we can do something really good here.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm about.
So you're telling me you're not a DJ, producer, a social media manager, streamer, label. You know, it's kind of, when you think about it, it totally makes sense that you do that, because the stuff that we have to do as an artist, it's unparalleled. Especially if you're also a dad, you have to be a husband as well. You're doing other stuff as well. Like, how is it possible to not do that?
Yeah, it's impossible. So you have to have a team around you.
Yeah,
you just cannot do it, you know, on your own. You have to have a team around you. And as soon as you're, I'm fortunate enough that I run my own business and I'm able to invest in this platform as well. And, you know, without that, it's definitely a struggle. You know, even I don't do as much social media as I should be doing. And that's something that I'm trying to sort out at the moment to up my social media game as well. And it's just learning all those parts of the business.
It's terrible. Don't do it. No, I think social media is one of the worst things for a creative artist, to be honest. Because right now in like the world that we live in, if I switch on a TV in the morning and then I already know, like if I see what's going on in the world, then I won't be making music today because it's impossible. There's no more creative inspiration anymore. So I would stay away from that if you would use social media as just banned. Better thing right now, Yuriko Bai wants to know, what's your favorite hobbies aside from producing music?
Oh, good one. Okay, so
yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, girl.
Yeah, love it. So I've got a few different hobbies. One of them is motorsport. I've been racing since I've been 8 years old, and love motorsport. So anytime I get to jump in a car and go fast around a track, I'm a happy boy. There's only two places where I can be completely in the flow and not be tracked by other thoughts. One of them is you know, driving a car fast, and the others behind those decks, or you know, sometimes when you get in the zone producing as well. But yeah, typically they're the two places where I'm just 100% focused and in flow state. So motorsport is one. And then pre-kids it was different, but now with kids I just love spending time being dad and doing stupid things
it gives you an excuse to do stupid stuff again.
Absolutely stupid stuff. That's the new hobby, if you like, is being a dad, because that's world changing for sure.
Mm-hmm. In driving a cars, how do we have to see that? What kind of cars do you race?
So back when I was 8 years old, I raced in karts, and then tried to make a career out of it, but it's
that's very expensive and a lot of time consuming as well.
Yeah, you need a lot of money. So didn't do that, and went to uni instead, and then DJ.
That's wise.
Otherwise, I mean, in caterums, or I raced in a series called the Fun Cup. We did a couple of 25-hour races at Spa-Francorchamps as well.
Oh wow!
Yeah, that was fantastic.
What does it feel like to go through Eau Rouge at full speed?
So in a Fun Cup, it's flat out. So that experience at night with your headlights and 120 other cars on the grid—scary. Oh my god, it is incredible though. The G-force that you get as you go up and then over the top of Radeon, and then. Down the straight, and you're just flat out. And you can actually, in these cars, you would draft each other and you could overtake someone, and there's enough time on the straight for them to then draft you and then re-overtake you, because you know we're only doing about 120 down the straight, and I'd want to be pushing like 150, 60, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But those sort of cars, and anything that's fast. But I love it.
Is that something that you do more often? Is it something that you have to prepare for a long time and then you start doing it? How to see that?
It's one of those things, like I don't think I would ever lose the ability to ride the bike, as it were, you know, but definitely to sharpen your eye, and get because we're talking about tenths of a second difference, you know, over lap after lap after lap. And to get in that zone, yeah, you would need to, like, I haven't raced for a couple of years now, but to get back in that zone, I would definitely need a good bit of testing time before getting back in the car to be able to be absolutely on it.
That's a good hobby. Scary. Also, I think it's also underrated how much effort it costs to take one of these cars around a track.
Yeah, it's thousands of pounds, and that's before you break the thing as well. So if you have a crash, yeah, it's a seriously expensive day. But we'll have to go around Zandvoort.
Yeah, I've done it once in I think it was a Ferrari or a Lamborghini. Like, yeah. you can take these courses. It's really, really cool. Next question. Lane 69 Luca wants to know, who was your inspiration when you started out? That's a good question.
Yeah. I touched on it earlier. So Bedrock, you know, Heaven Sent, you know, that's definitely, but some of the early 90s stuff, I mean, we were talking about it off air earlier, you know, the DJ Sammy and the Ian Van Dow and, yeah, you know, early stuff like that, of course, Faithless. And then, you know, I take it actually inspiration from a lot of different genres. I mean, I love Pendulum, you know, I love the drummer there, Andy Gwangadeen, who was actually a Spice Girls drummer as well.
No way, really?
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, he has a drum kit called the Gwangoscope. That's this big round thing. And so that with drum and bass, he could hit a drum and then on the upstroke, hit the other drum. So he could really, yeah, exactly. So yeah, artists like that. And because I learned to drum when I was at school. So I've been drumming for a lot of years. I don't want to think about how many years. drumming, even the Foo Fighters and, you know, some rock stuff as well. So I, you know, broad range of stuff. But early days of trance, I mean, you know, my favorite sort of records are, you know, the John O'Callaghan Big Sky and, you know, records like that, that really got me into the rave scene, you know, with nights like God's Kitchen at Air and, you know, even in Passion, when we'd be going down there to see JFK and, you know, you had a few hard house nights like Sunday Central and, you know, all those early rave days that are really fond in the memory. You know, there were some special, you know, connections with really, really good friends that will last a lifetime from that.
Messy nights. Yeah, very messy, sure, night.
Yeah, yeah, messy weekend. Yeah.
And how did you come about? How did you find out about this radio show, about the State of Trance? Because that's all. I remember the first time when I tuned in, for example. But do you still have a vivid memory of finding out about the State of Trance?
So my stag do was at Den Bosch. So we went to 600 or 650 at Den Bosch. So that was the first time when I really went to the brand night, you know, to an event. You know, that was a sort of introduction to I think a state of trance at that point.
How did you come up with going to a state of trance for a stag do?
Just because
all
of my friends were you know, ravers. So even the track I did with Rudaz, Rubik and Rudaz, Kiki, he did the squash club parties with me back in the day.
Wow.
So yeah, we've been, you know, friends for years and years. So so that's, you know, why we did a track together right at the start as well. So yeah, it's just I forgot where I was going with that.
Well, you had a stag do at the Den Bosch.
There we go. Yeah. Thank you. Back on track.
Yeah.
And in fact, one of my favorite sets ever is Umut Ozkan at Den Bosch. And that, when he was playing
Reboot.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. And the cube, the box, you know, stuff like that. It was, yeah, unbelievable. And I was like, okay, I want to produce stuff like this. And then we saw him at Ministry of Sound as well. And I was like, okay, now I really want to do that. So that's when I really started. In fact, pre being Rubik, I was part of a duo called Sholam with Gareth Hardin. And that was my first sort of step into production pre-releasing under Rubik. Mm-hmm. And we worked with Dave Parkinson at the time.
Oh, yeah.
Good old DP, and his packs were awesome.
Fantastic,
by the way.
Engineer.
Yeah, unbelievable. Great melody writer, you know. And he was part of the Happy Mondays, I think. Something. Yeah. So yeah, that was sort of the
introduction to A State of Trance was
exactly.
You are, and are you still going to parties with these friends, or how do they see that you would have been performing on A State of Trance, right? So
yeah,
would have been like a circle complete kind of thing, or were your friends going to come with you to celebrate this?
Yeah, so we had a group of us, you know, come out to ASOT to watch me play. So it was like, okay, we've been fans all this time, and actually the first time we met Armin was through my wife winning a ASOT ambassador package, and we had backstage passes, and I remember giving him a USB stick of some tunes, and I think CFEN might have been on that USB stick, and I just remember Armin going, make sure your email address is on here. So it was. I left it in a notepad file on there, and then Joel got in contact, and but it was circle complete, you know, and there was a lot of emotion tied around it, because it was like, you know, we've gone to all these different brands, and you know, the State of Trance is sort of the pinnacle of trance, and getting to play that, was unbelievable.
That's a good story, to be honest. Edinburgh, correct me if I'm wrong, Ernbrl, sorry, had a question. When will you start producing, or when will you produce a 138 BPM song? If you are ever going to.
I think I've enjoyed the 138 genre as a punter rather than a producer. So I've been the other side of the decks for a lot of 138 stuff. And I don't think, you know, that's where I am, you know, wanting to go with the production stuff. You know, if I was on a night out, it's still enjoyable, but I don't think I could bring anything new to that space. I haven't got the inspiration to go there.
You produce mostly around 130, 132, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And if you would go up, that means that you don't have, how do you say, you don't have time anymore to produce these grooves, because your music is also about weird bass grooves and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. So it would have, the whole formula would change. I'd have to have all new packs and, you know, plug in. It would completely change. So I don't think that's where I'm going to go, but you know, I still love going to the Who's Afraid of 138 room and
bring a hammer
and an hour of stomping like a madman around there.
I love that too, to be honest. Utah official, how does it feel to only release bangers? I don't know if it's a compliment or a question, pretty much. How does it feel?
Well, I'll take it.
Because your releases are doing so good, so well right now.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. And only releasing bangers, well, yeah, that's a compliment in itself. And I think the thing is, what you don't realize behind the scene is there's five throwaway tracks.
Of course.
That, you know, to get to that one. So it's not, yeah, I'm only releasing the best stuff. But there is a folder full of other stuff that just isn't, you know, isn't up to scratch. So.
Oh, you should have folded it. I have, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. You'll start an idea at 1 a.m. and you go, oh,
yeah. The typical morning after. What the hell was I thinking?
Yeah, exactly.
You should have gone to bed, dude. Nadine has a question as well. If you didn't become a DJ producer, what would you be doing right now?
Well, it's, you know, it's not a full-time job for me, DJing and producing. So so I own a marketing agency that does financial lead generation. So completely different side of the, you know, business. It's sort of left brain, right brain, you know, stuff. So that's what I do as a day job. You know, you know, unfortunately we're not touring the world and earning the money to you know, be where we need to on the DJing side. But mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a semi-profession for me at the moment.
Yeah, I'm curious there's actually a question I would love to see, like, how, if you have a day job like that, you're a dad, you have hobbies, what does a typical day look like for you as Rubik?
Chaos.
Chaos, absolute chaos.
Well, it starts at 5 a.m. when our son comes through and wakes us up by jumping on the bed, that scares the absolute crap out of my wife, because it's like a scene from a horror film where you've just got this child standing at the side of your bed and you're like, oh, what's going on? Then, you know, it's standard breakfast stuff, getting them ready for nursery and trying to get out of the door without, you know, screaming at everyone. Mm-hmm. But then, yeah, it's you know, an office job during the day. But I will sneak an hour in and I'll think, oh, I've got a little melody idea there. So I'll quickly open Ableton, scrub that down and then save that. You know, evenings at chill time. But that's probably when I then, you know, when we've done with the evening jobs of getting them bathed and bed and that, I'll jump on the laptop for a few hours then and try and get some projects finished or come up with some ideas or you know, plan some social media posts. But I also have a VA, a virtual assistant that will help me schedule everything. And
'cause that's the secret.
Yeah.
Because I think one of the hardest things, especially because there's not a lot of, like, whatever people say, there's not a lot of people that can live a sustainable life with income, especially right now, as a trance DJ artist or even EDM artist. So you have to find the right balance. And how would you, what kind of tip would you give to people that are coming up, that are struggling with the same amount of time issues? How do you find discipline? Or how do you do that?
So
how do you keep yourself on your toes that you're disciplined enough to make music also on the side of other things?
It is very strict discipline and having a very, very understanding wife that will let you go. And, you know, so I did a writing week last week. I was in Amsterdam the whole week, from Monday to Thursday. And, you know, I took that time as I'm having no distractions. I'm just going to solidly write. For 4 days, so having that, but then understanding what are different levels of tasks that you don't need to fulfill yourself. You don't have to do everything yourself. And I'm in the fortunate position that we, you know, we have got a bit of money to you know, bring a small team in and help out with some stuff. But you've got to think, right, what is the 80-20 rule? What is the stuff that's super important? You know, for me, it's making the hooks, the melodies, and, you know, picking out top line vocals and you know, coming up with those sort of hooks and that structure the track. And then I know if I've got something there, I can come back to it and finish it quite quickly with the workflows that we've got now. But and then it's understanding, right, I don't need to schedule all my social media stuff. I could just create a Dropbox folder and have someone else do that. And actually Heidi, who's in the Philippines, she works for my marketing agency and she's, you know, full time. So I just brought her in for some of the Rubik stuff as well.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. And you know, some of the graphics, etc. I use my design team. So I'm sort of drawing a little bit off those guys as well. So yeah, I think it's just understanding, look, you can't be a superhero and do everything.
Yeah.
So you have to go, right, what is the most important things to get done? You know, and what's going to progress you to the next point? And for me at the moment, that's, you know, getting the releases under the belt, having some solid, you know, ideas around what I want to do with Rubik as a brand, not as just, you know, me turning up with a memory stick and playing, you know, which is why I'm now going to start investing in some video stuff and trying to, you know, really create some unique stuff. So when I turn up to a gig, I'm more than just, you know, a logo behind me. I'm coming with a full show.
Yeah. I think that's amazing advice, to be honest, to focus on what you're good at and try to find help with the stuff that you maybe aren't good at or you don't have time for it, basically. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, exactly.
And you get rid of every distractions around you. For example, social media, because I know myself, I'm guilty sometimes also that you'd be scrolling down on Instagram, whatever, you just throw away time. You could have written an amazing melody at that same time while you were doing that, basically.
Yeah, and you know, time is the most precious resource that we've got. Or that we don't have. So, you know, and I'm guilty for it less so now. I really try and not scroll as much as, because I'll just get angry with myself.
Yeah.
You know, for a lot of different reasons, either what's going on in the world or, you know, maybe I won't feel like I'm doing as well as I should be, either in business or with the Rubik side of things. So yeah, I have those feelings of going, oh, look at that person doing that.
Yeah.
And
why is he getting that show and why am I not getting that show?
Yeah, exactly.
And I know what it feels like.
And it's you know, I've learned to be envious rather than jealous, and I think there's an important distinction there. You know, so being envious, you know, and you know, I love seeing people, you know, climb their own ladders, and you know, I'm busy climbing my own, and don't get distracted by, you know, what the noise. In fact, there's a really good blog called Signal Versus Noise, and the guys there from 37 Signals, they're actually a software development agency, but there's a lot of sort of life posts around, you know, getting rid of the noise and looking at what the signals are, and that's, you know, that's what I try and do to get it all done in the time that we have, but it goes like that, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you so much for the great advice. That was already the end of this podcast. Thank you for your time. I wish you all the success, of course, and hope to catch you again very soon in the studio once again.
Yeah, thank you.
Any last words?
Hey, thank you very much for having me. Simple as that. No magic words.
No magic. Well, you gave a lot of good and free advice already, so thank you for that.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
That's it for this podcast. Next week, we're going to be back with another special guest. It's going to be Nifra, so see you then. Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning in. To check full episodes of A State of Trance for free, simply visit armandradio.com. A State of Trance returns next week.